Blog Talk Radio.
This is Debbie Guy Gage for the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to WRMR, Revenue Marketer Radio. Every Thursday at 1 o'clock, we meet to talk to a real, genuine revenue marketer and learn tips and tricks on how they've made that transition from traditional marketing to revenue marketing. So before I introduce today's guest and talk about the wonderful journey to metrics, I'd like to take a moment to define the term revenue marketer. First of all, a revenue marketer is a specific type of marketer. Just like you've got PR, Marcom, product marketing, a revenue marketer is a very specific type of marketer who has revenue or revenue-related accountability through the kinds of campaigns, communications, and digital interactions they set up. They are responsible for the top of the sales funnel and interacting with and nurturing leads until they're sales ready. They all use some type of marketing automation platform integrated with CRM to power their revenue marketing practice and to get the revenue results. And one of the things that every single revenue marketer is concerned with, actually obsessed with, is how to get to that revenue number. So that's why I'm so pleased to introduce my good friend Zorian from Veeam. He's a VP, and I've known Zorian, gosh, I guess going on, it feels like about 2 years, but maybe for only about a year now. But let me give you a little bit about his background, Zorian Rottenberg, and then we'll get right into the interview and learn how Zorian has made this journey to real metrics. First of all, Zorian is vice president at Veeam Software, which is an international company that develops and sells data protection and systems management software for virtualized IT environments, including the award-winning backup and replication software for VMware. At Veeam, Zorian runs the Internet Marketing Group, and he's going to share with you his whole structure, which is just absolutely massive, because he's responsible for email marketing, lead generation, lead nurturing, blogger advertisements, search engine marketing, content marketing, you know, so all the white papers, all the webinars, as well as the social media marketing as well. Basically, any kind of online campaign that delivers and cultivates sales leads, this is his area of responsibility. Now, prior to Veeam, Zorian was president and CEO of Starwind Software, and prior to that, he was vice president at Acronos. He is a very data-driven kind of guy. He started his career in Wall Street as an investment banking analyst, where he focused on mergers and acquisitions and financing transactions, and also spent his first few years of his career dabbling in Excel for 100 hours a week, which these things in his early career really have come back to serve him very, very well now. Zorian graduated from Lehigh University with a degree in finance and with minors in applied mathematics and computer science. And he has an MBA from Harvard Business School. So, Zorian, welcome to the show.
Debbie, thank you very much. Really glad to be here. Huge fan of your podcast, and I listen to it every time I go to the gym, which is very often, actually.
You're so funny. Maybe I need to listen to them when I go to the gym. It is such a pleasure to have you on the show, because of all the revenue marketers I know, you are probably in the top five, I would say, when it comes to everything that you've done around metrics. So let's start the interview first by telling us a little bit about your company and your role in the company. And so why don't we start there?
Sure. And I think you're being a little bit too nice about the top five. I think we're doing pretty well, but I am really humbled by a lot of the guests that you have on the show and what they do.
Well,
and I learned quite a lot.
I have a challenge to all our listeners. After you hear this interview, if you don't think that Zorian's in at least the top five, but not the top three when it comes to what he's achieved with metrics, everybody just send me an email at debbie@pedowitzgroup.com. I'll let you know what they say. How about that, Zorian?
All right. Very good. Thank you. So you wanted me to tell you a little bit about Veeam and...
Yeah, and your role.
Okay. Sure. So I run internet marketing and, you know, mainly responsible for delivering sales-ready leads that help grow or generate revenue, right, at the overarching level. And as you said, the major disciplines of the internet marketing include email marketing, lead generation, lead nurturing campaigns, blogger advertisements, SEO, AdWords PPC, content marketing with white papers, webinars, social media marketing, etc. Underlying all of these practices, if you will, or disciplines, is analytics. And in fact, I have a person exclusively dedicated to analytics. Their title is Revenue and Performance Analyst. And you know, this is a very data-driven group, very focused on metrics, and metrics in real time, in fact.
And, so one of the things, Jordan, that I find really interesting about your role is that a lot of the things that you're responsible for, first of all, they go together very, very nicely. But how long have you been at Veeam?
Actually, started with Veeam about a year ago.
Okay.
And when
they were looking to hire somebody like you, were they looking for people that had a background in this revenue marketing type of area? Were they specifically looking for that kind of skill set and that kind of leadership?
Yeah, I think so. The CEO of this company knew me because I ran a company in which he was invested, and Starwind Software. And he knew that my background is very analytical and focused on what I would call low-cost customer acquisition, which is a lot of lead generation that's very data-driven and data-focused, kind of inbound marketing, which is a term I believe coined by HubSpot. And he knew me very well for the focus on very analytical marketing in generating leads on a very low budget for Starwind Software, this company.
And the reason I brought that up is that if you take a look at companies and how they're making this journey toward revenue marketing, we do find that companies are proactively sourcing marketing executives and marketing leadership that have a background in this, which quite often is not the traditional, you know, marketer kind of role. So I think it's just another example of what senior management is looking for, or a part of what they're looking for, that's really, really critical when you take a look at the total marketing mix for any company.
Well, you know, it's interesting. So when I got here, we developed three key priorities for building out the internet marketing group. One of them was to develop a strategy for internet marketing, right? The other one was to hire and build a scalable team to support the growth of the company. And if people on this podcast look at our press releases, this is public information. The company has been more than doubling, quite a bit more than doubling on an annual basis year to year, and has grown very rapidly.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. It really is a fantastic company. We needed a scalable team to support that kind of growth. And the third basic key priority for us in internet and building out internet marketing was to implement a marketing automation system that will help to support that. And, you know, for the second kind of priority, to hire and build a scalable team, what's interesting is I hired a lot of people, dozens of people, brand new people into this group that didn't really have much experience in internet marketing. They were all very smart and very hard political, and those were the key foundations for hiring this group, the people into this group. You probably know the quote from Jim Collins in Good to Great, a very kind of famous book, of course. A lot of people on this call read it.
I'm a big fan.
Yeah, so he says, first who, then what. So I focused on hiring the people, the who, right? Then we figured out into what positions we would place them, right? So
that's right. He talks
some
about getting the right people on the bus and then deciding what direction the bus is headed in.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, we hired, you know, one person. We initially put her into a scheduling specialist position, keeping track of all the schedules so that everybody's on the same page every week and knows what e-cards or email blasts, we call them e-cards, where, you know, how many are going out and which ones are going out, and to keep track of all the details. And she was so fantastic, she became a customer insight specialist, which is basically marketing automation. And she's an expert in Marketo right now. So, you were talking about the kind of people you would hire. Really, we focused on very smart, analytical, and hardworking folks that we hired, and then we taught them everything. I will divulge my secret and say this, that when I hired everybody, I made everybody take the HubSpot inbound marketing certification, those 14 or so classes online that are free, actually. And by the way, HubSpot is not reimbursing me for this flexing advertisement here. Promotion. But that was kind of the foundation to understand what inbound / internet marketing is. And then from there on, I made them read Marketo blogs and HubSpot blogs and other internet, you know, obviously listen to your podcast. Believe me, that is very true. They love it as well. And we discussed at some points on our weekly call some of the ideas we learned. So that was the foundation with lots of this kind of training. And
I love that approach, Soren, because we have people ask all the time, how do I get a team up to speed? And you were kind of fortunate, because it's not like you were coming into a large team and assuming and then having to change roles when people were hired for something else. You were able to actually build a team from scratch. But even with that, I think you have some great points of advice in that, number one, you knew that to be successful in this demand generation practice that you've got, that they had to be smart, they had to be analytical, they probably had to be somewhat, you know, technology savvy as well. And then you made sure they had the right kind of training underneath their belt. And this whole notion of how we train B2B marketers is an area of great interest for me, because, quite frankly, there are a few places where the B2B marketer can go to get training. I actually was talking to Al Mag, and Al is the new national chairman for the BMA this week. And we were actually talking about that subject. So I love the way that you've come in. You guys bought Marketo, put it in as a marketing automation system, and you've hired it to, like, what, 14 people on your team now?
Well, no, I have the entire team of internet marketing, which includes the website and marketing operations and all that, you know, with search engine optimization and email marketing and campaign management, I have like 50 people. But for the email marketing team that specializes in working with Marketo, I have 14 people. And that also includes, you know, a team manager and two team leaders under her. And, you know, we have folks specializing in supporting EMEA, like Europe, Middle East, and Africa, and APAC, Asia-Pacific marketing team. We have a person specializing on maintenance renewals emails. We obviously have a writer for our emails. We have an HTML specialist, segmentation specialist, drip campaign specialist. You name it, we have a lot of people. And, of course, several landing page specialists and landing pages. And landing page optimization is a whole science of its own, so it requires quite a lot of thought in designing a landing page.
Absolutely. And maybe you could also share, testing, absolutely. And it's such a great efficiency to be able to create and test those landing pages. But maybe you can also share with the audience how many emails you send out, because you certainly have a dedicated team, and you guys are serving prospects and customers on a global basis. So how many emails are you sending out? What's the scale of what you're doing in demand generation look like?
Oh, so it's actually quite large. And we went from about sending 20 global emails in January of 2010, which is a year and a half ago. And right now, towards the end of Q2, we were sending 262 global email campaigns or blasts. We call them e-cards. So 262 e-cards means that in every variety of segments that are being sent, touching total contacts of about 1 million people, right? Over 990,000 email contacts in our database. Obviously, a lot of them are repeat, and so it's not unique, right? We can send a dozen or so emails hitting the same person during the month. Which I'm sure a lot of folks listening to the podcast may be cringing, thinking that we have a huge opt-out rate, which is definitely not the case. We've actually found out that sending emails more frequently does not necessarily spike up the unsubscribe rate, and that's a whole conversation of its own. And a lot of people don't believe me when I say that, but it is true. So
if you send something of value that someone wants to read, there's no reason for them to opt out, right? So it's, and it sounds like you have done this incredible job of really taking the time to analyze how people are responding to things and ensuring that it is a high-quality touch. So it can be as many touches as required, as long as there's an exchange of value, which is what we always talk about. So you went from like doing basically 20 campaigns to about 262 global campaigns, touching over a million people. And that's in what period of time?
1 month.
So 1 month.
I mean, we had to scale the team that can send a heck of a lot more emails and in a very detailed, segmented way. So granular segmentations by products, by campaigns, by white paper topic or webinar topic, by sales promotion versus marketing promotion, by physical event, by country, by local, even by city where we have small local events and we want to invite folks just in that city to, say, a channel partner event which we are co-hosting, right? So, and each one of these campaigns requires a landing page, an email campaign. It requires connections to Salesforce, tracking it, et cetera. It is a huge effort. You know, you're talking about sending globally roughly 10 to 15 emails a day when you're sending 250 to 300 emails or e-cards per month. So that's why we needed to really build out this very scalable team, not only whole internet marketing, but even specifically email marketing. And that's why we needed marketing automation like Marketo. We had basically three key reasons for getting a marketing automation system. One of them is increased sales through lead nurturing, right? Second is drastically increase marketing and sales productivity by giving sales qualified or sales-ready leads, not just raw marketing leads, right? And the third key reason for marketing automation was to keep customer acquisition costs down, right, by improving the lead development process and lead nurturing before passing the leads to sales. So instead of, again, passing the raw leads, you're passing a more qualified sales-ready leads that are that have a higher lead score.
I want to ask, because I think you guys were so incredibly focused as the reasons why you guys were buying and implementing marketing automation. Number one, to improve sales through lead nurturing. Number two, to improve sales and marketing productivity. And number three, to drive down customer acquisition costs. Now, you guys deployed Marketo in, what, February of 2011?
Yes, we deployed it at the end of January, early February of 2011. And, of course, the Pedowitz Group helped us out, and I have to say you guys have done a really great job, and you clearly are not paying me to say that. So,
thank you very much. That's right. So have you seen, and we're going to talk about metrics, and we're going to talk about from strategically all the way down to the detail level of metrics, because it's an area that our listeners just can't get enough information on. So since February, which is really not a lot of time, have you guys seen any major impact on these three reasons, increased sales through lead nurturing, increased productivity, or decreased customer acquisition cost?
Yes, absolutely. No question about it. And it's at every layer of the funnel, in fact, right? If you think about it, I'm going to give you a long answer, but I want to kind of chat about these statistics that I have in mind from Marketing Sherpa, Marketing Profs, Demand Gen, and Marketo that I've collected over time, and I always think of them when I talk to folks either internally or externally. And if you think about it, over 90% of website visitors don't identify themselves. This is generic industry benchmarks, right? So 9 out of 10 people that visit your site don't even identify themselves to you. So are you somehow offering better content on your site or optimizing your website to capture those leads before they leave the website and bounce out? 95% of web visitors are not ready to even speak to sales, but 70% of them will buy from your competitor in the next 12 months. I believe that may be a stat from Marketo. Readers spend about 15 to 20 seconds looking at marketing emails. What are you doing about that, right? So are you optimizing your emails to make sure that readers actually click through, that you don't have low click-through rates? 79% of marketing leads never even become sales-ready leads. 79%, Debbie. if you don't have marketing automation, if you don't have smart drip campaigns, if you don't have great content to feed into that marketing automation engine, you're going to have 8 out of 10 people roughly that are not even sales ready, which means passing those leads to your sales reps reduces their productivity and really reduces their pipeline and their sales ability. Unless most companies are only closing 2-4% of market leads. So 96% of the leads leak out. That's very low. So you're closing 2 or 4 leads out of 100 that you get. I mean, that's really bad. That's really low, right? Because those are leads. I mean, if that was just website visits or visitors, that would be actually okay. But of all of your leads, you're only closing 2-4%. That means you really have to work hard to optimize things. And marketing automation as a tool really comes in handy, right? So you've asked me, did we increase things since February? Absolutely. We've increased basically across the board from, at a basic level, open rates in our emails and click-through rates and conversion on landing pages. A lot of it obviously helped, and conversions in general helped with drip campaigns through Marketo. But we've also increased conversions from opportunities to sales, from all leads to sales, and from all leads to opportunities, right? There's actually some interesting statistics or benchmarks that Marketo, I believe it was Marketo, I'm pretty confident, was shared at either their conference last year or in one of the presentations that I've seen recently. And there's a benchmark for how many opportunities you get from all of your leads. And the benchmark they have is 10%. We've gone from about roughly 10% to over 18% towards the end of Q2.
Oh, right? That's awesome.
The benchmark for conversion to sales from all of your leads, according to that same presentation, again, I believe that was Marketo, is 1.5%. You're not going to believe me, but I'll tell you, we had about 9.82% towards the end of Q2.
That's amazing.
Maybe that presentation and the benchmarks that I saw, they made some kind of a mistake, because 1.5% is low, but still, I think we are a multiple or a few above the industry average. And the benchmark for opportunity to sale conversion in that same presentation that I remember was 15%. We have over 52.4%.
Wow.
Towards the end
that's
of the
amazing.
Jordan,
this is some amazing numbers. Yeah, I mean,
those are very good numbers.
And you're right. We do finally have some really great benchmarks that are coming out through companies like Marketo. Eloqua publishes a lot, Serious Decisions, Marketing Profs, Demand Gen. They all report, you know, some really, really good baseline measures. But you're right. You are a multitude above the average. And I think part of that is that you are a data guy. You are an analytics guy. And what you have put in place is this team that's really focused on getting to a revenue impact, who really are focusing on activities and programs that really help the company drive revenue. So I'm sure you didn't, you know, get to these great numbers overnight. So I think it would be real helpful for you to share with our listeners kind of how your journey toward these effective metrics. And I will say that I know the journey began by, number one, hiring people that had an analytical background, and you yourself having a big data and analytical background. So I think that's probably step one for any organization. If you really want to be focused on the metrics, and you should, then you've got to get analytics, and it has to become a part of your life. So you clearly put that foundation in place. But just kind of walk us through, because a lot of times in the early days of marketing automation, what you measure day one is not the same thing that you're measuring day, you know, 120. So just kind of walk us through what your ideas about metrics were in the early days of your implementation, and how you've improved and changed that, and how you've grown in this competency over the past couple of quarters.
Yeah, so when I started, the company was already measuring some of the fundamental metrics that are important to the business. And this is beyond sales, of course. So on the marketing side, of course, the company measured the number of emails that were being sent, you know, emails, open rates, click-through rates, obviously things like site visits, different campaigns, and, you know, kind of number of campaigns ran, how many products were downloaded. All of these basic things were definitely measured. But our goal was to go really deep, right? And we wanted to measure, so for instance, instead of just measuring an open rate or CTR, a click-through rate, or the kind of the most fundamental email marketing metrics, we wanted to measure them by different types of categories. So event campaigns are different from lead nurturing campaigns, are different from a newsletter, right? So, you know, obviously the open rate and the click rate on the newsletter is not going to be the same as one where you're inviting somebody to download a white paper or to come to a webinar or to some physical event. Different from product release emails. It's obviously different from sales promotions. Let's say sales promotions where somebody gets 40% discount on an upgrade to a more advanced version of a product, or a bundle of some sort. And that's different from webinar invitations, you know, or webinar follow-ups. You know, webinar follow-ups, when you email somebody and say, thank you for coming to a webinar, here's a recorded version, that has a much higher open rate and click rate because somebody already came to the webinar and is familiar with it, right? So we started measuring these categories separately. And for each of these types of categories and more that I didn't mention, we have detailed open rates, average open rates each month, click rates, click to open, opt-out rates. We want to measure opt-out, and we measure it actually on a daily and weekly basis, really in real time, to make sure that there's nothing spiking up and no campaign is, you know, has significantly higher opt-outs than, say, 0.3, 0.4% of a campaign.
So, Zori, let me just say, I love this idea of being able to go deep. So, right, instead of taking a look at an aggregate open or aggregate click-through, you're doing it by category, by type of email that goes out. And I love it because this just makes so much sense to me. So you have emails that invite people to register, and then you've got the follow-up. If they're in a regular lead nurturing campaign, the newsletter, the product release, the sales promotions, all of these will have different expected rates, whether it's open or click-through or even conversion, you know, based on the call to action. So I would imagine that by going deeper and by doing this detailed analysis by category, that you probably have an actual versus a goal that you've set up.
Absolutely. For all of the campaigns, we have detailed plans that include objectives, you know, specific KPIs, from how many leads we want to achieve from that campaign to what campaign ROI we want to have that obviously impacts opportunity, pipeline, and sales for every single campaign.
Were you guys doing this from day one with your Marketo implementation, or is that something that you got to eventually?
Yeah, actually, you know, we started doing that even before we implemented Marketo, because that was really important for me to track the campaigns and to set MBOs for the team in terms of hitting specific targets. And, you know, and by the way, we measure, I was just, in terms of those campaigns and categories that I said we measure open rates and click rates, that's just at a very basic level that we started doing. We go even beyond that. I mean, now we have a full sales funnel built out in Excel that we measure, like I was mentioning a few conversions to you earlier. We measure detailed conversions from visitors to trials, to opportunities, to close deals. We measure unique leads that are deduplicated to nurtured leads, which come back. So in other words, we have a whole Excel spreadsheet measuring hundreds of thousands of leads, basically going back for a few years and showing only unique per month, so nobody ever returns again based on email, right? And we also measure how many do come back again. So the same person that downloaded something 6 months ago and comes back, we measure that for the lead nurturing tab of the spreadsheet. We measure things like leakage or breakage in a funnel based on conversions and how they change per month. So if any conversion goes down, we ask why. If it consistently goes down for a few months, we ask a lot of whys. So we one of my favorite recent analyses we did was correlation between specific lead segments and actual sales with different sales cycles. So I found out which specific monthly unique product download had a 0.7 or 70% correlation to sales within 15 to 30 sales cycle. And we knew which segment to nurture in order to have a significant effect on these types of sales. And that's the kind of stuff we do right now.
That's amazing. And these are what Dorian has done here. Clearly, he's taken basically the fundamentals, and the number one fundamental is to have an attitude of metrics are good for us, and to set those metrics and to set those goals for everything that you do. So you've always got a goal, and you've got an actual, and then you've got a gap in what you need to do. That's number one. It's always, you know, create this atmosphere for metrics. Number two, you've obviously for a while been, you know, really gathering your baseline numbers. That's very, very important. Get those baselines in place. And number three, and which is very interesting to me, is that you track everything on Excel, but you really have taken Excel to new heights. And number two, you actually have people who have MBOs tied to the metrics that you track actually input the data into Excel. So tell us a little bit about how you use Excel and how your team uses Excel, because I found that fascinating as well.
Yeah, I absolutely love Excel, and it's been my favorite software program on the computer since before college even. But, you know, like, as you know, I started my job in investment banking on Wall Street, so as an investment banking analyst, you literally spend 80 to 100 hours a week behind an Excel screen, right, building mergers, acquisitions, models, you know, sensitivity analyses of various acquisitions and financing on public companies, et cetera. So Excel is really in my blood. And I find that Excel is really the best way to keep all of your data in. Of course, you can build dashboards in Salesforce. But even if you have that data in Salesforce, you can't write a few quick equations and calculate conversions or trends, you know, declines or increases in your monthly visitors or leads, et cetera. You can do all of that in Excel. So I really prefer to quickly get all the data into Excel and start looking at it and analyzing it so that I can easily run a few quick equations and formulas and look at what the trending is. Again, you cannot do that in Salesforce, but you could build dashboards in Salesforce. Now, I also like Excel because you can grab information from various different sources and combine it all together in a way that's really meaningful. So, for instance, for me, it's very important to look at the sales funnel on a monthly basis, on a weekly basis even, but really I look at it on a monthly basis in aggregate. And that data comes, so the sales funnel works very simply, as everybody knows. You know, you start with unique site visitors. You then have a row showing your leads, leads from various different sources like white paper leads, webinar leads, product demo leads, various product downloads leads, external leads. So, for instance, if you go do lead generation with external vendors, like guaranteed leads campaigns that we do, for instance, with various industry publications and bloggers, then you put all of those rows in Excel, then you show your total opportunities, then you show your total sales. And now you have this data, site visitors from Google Analytics, leads from Salesforce, opportunities and sales from Salesforce. So you're aggregating all this information from various different sources. This is why you can't really stay in any one application, for instance, like Salesforce, because you're going to miss some of the data points on which you want to run some kind of formulas to understand the trending and the changes in kind of month to month. So that is why I love using Excel.
So how many, if you think about your email marketing team, the 14 folks that you've got really focused on demand generation and that part of revenue marketing, how many KPIs do you think they track and report on?
In email marketing, I have in my dashboard right now 105 rows of data that we track. Now, of course, this includes by each category, as I mentioned earlier, like event campaigns and lead nurturing campaigns and newsletter campaigns. For each one, we have average opens, average clicks, click-to-opens, opt-outs. I track email addresses in our database by region, number of emails we send by region, number of recipients we send each month, and many, many other things. You know, of course, there I also track clicks in the emails by actual number, not just percentage. In fact, one of the key objectives for the manager of the email marketing team is how many clicks we'll get per month, right? Because a click is a website visit. It's a website visit. And to me, that's a very important KPI. How much can we increase website visit and get some of the folks in our database, not just new leads, to return to the website, spend more time on it, and download more marketing assets like white papers or sign up for webinars or preferably download our product, our trial product. Right? So there's a lot of value to that. So I tie her to that objective on every quarter, basically. She has a number to hit, and she divides
so
that each month.
Does your team have variable compensation that's tied to hitting these KPIs?
Yes, absolutely, bonuses.
that's
some folks ask me if we pay commissions on sales. We don't. I think that'd be interesting to implement that in the future. And that's been on my mind, but it's hard to do, right, because only sales really traditionally gets paid 8% commission. But they absolutely are tied to their MBOs with bonuses.
That is so interesting. So 105 rows of data that you track. How do you look at that data and analyze it so that you can make an overall impact? Tell me about how that process works.
Yeah, so, you know, I have a dashboard, a big Excel spreadsheet with, like, many, many tabs that, cover a dashboard for email marketing, covering a dashboard for our blogger advertisements, showing how many blogs we cover. We right now have banner advertising on over 60 blogs worldwide. And I measure, obviously, for each of those blogs, how many site visits we get, basically how many clicks they get to us. And I also look at how many site visitors that blogger has to see if these guys are trending up or down. So there are a lot of statistics that are really not very essential, but are not very difficult to keep track of, right? And each person responsible for that function area, from blogger advertisements to email marketing to white paper content marketing, to webinar content marketing, keeping track of registrants, keeping track of attendance versus those who didn't attend, to the social media dashboard showing me how many Twitter fans we have, how many retweets we have, how many site visits we have from Twitter or Facebook, how many folks come to our blog and read it and post and comment on it. I have all of that information, this huge spreadsheet, and I just told you a portion of all the things that we measure, right? But none of it is, or rather none of it, not a lot of it is absolutely essential and is not a priority, right? At the very high level, I pay attention to very select things, and even when I feed that information and present it to my CEO, I cut that down into a fraction of what I even look at myself. And then each person who's responsible for that functional area, from blogger advertisements to white paper content to webinar content to email marketing to social media marketing to SEO to PPC, these are all different areas that have separate people responsible for them. They build their own dashboards, and then they provide that information to me at the end of the month. In this way, I use the dashboards not only to keep track of the information for myself, but I also use it to manage my teams, right? Because when somebody actually fills in that information and they look at the data themselves that they're responsible for, they're much more driven to make sure that the trending in those key items does not slide down, you know, in any given month or quarter, right? They actually pay very careful attention to it, because I don't just send them something. They put it together themselves. They feel it, they breathe it, they live it, right? So at the high level, I look at very few things. And then to my CEO, I present even fewer things, and I'll tell you what they are. Because, you know, that's the most important things at a very high level to pay attention to. So my boss, the CEO of the company, I basically focus on presenting two key overarching things. One is priority, and second is results, right? So not activity. Not the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of rows of data in my dashboards, because that's just activity, right? And I'm sure you've heard that expression that activity does not equate to results, right? Spending a lot of time doing something doesn't mean you've accomplished anything useful. So I show them, you know, in terms of priority, there's also a great quote, you know, from Jim Collins again, I think also in Good to Great, that if you have more than three priorities, you don't have any priorities, right? You really can't prioritize too many things.
Absolutely true. I love that.
You know, so at the high level, I truly do show, answer three questions for my CEO. You know, are we increasing site visits? Are we increasing leads? Are we increasing revenue? We're helping grow revenue, right, by providing sales-ready leads to our sales team, right? So underneath the hood, of course, he can ask questions about, and he has a lot of questions, right? He's very smart. He can ask about product download trends, lead conversion rates, ROI by campaign time, what the marketing spend is, you know, he'll ask, you know, what's the visitors from Google AdWords versus SEO or direct site visits, leads generated by channel, dollar revenue from leads, what incremental gross profit and initial opportunity closed is based on campaigns. I mean, there's a lot of, there are a lot of hard questions and a lot of analytical data and a lot of time that needs to be spent to answer these. But at the very overarching level, he just wants to know those three things, right? And this kind of, I am sure this sounds a little intimidating to some folks, so I want to make sure I clarify a few things. I think telling people that just in email marketing dashboard alone, I have 105 rows of indicators. Don't worry about that number, right? You can really start with measuring just 3 to 5 things per functional category in internet marketing or in marketing in general, right? So in email marketing, you don't have to start with measuring all these different types of campaigns. You can just start, you know, the first 2 months by looking at the averages, typing them into Excel and looking at the trend. Then you go in and obviously isolate different categories and start looking at them individually. So you don't have to go too far out and get too granular. But if the marketing traditional marketing teams do hire an analytical person, even a college graduate who has an analytical background in math or finance or statistics who wants to get into marketing and operations, that's a great first step to beginning to analyze things at the top level and getting deeper. But there's absolutely no reason to be intimidated and worrying about getting too deep too quickly. Whatever it is that we do here, I want people to know that it's not the first step. It's the eventual kind of not even destination, because we're not even near a destination, but
we're going to come back to that, because you are intimidating, because you have done. I mean, you started, I told you, Zori, in top three, top five, I'm here to tell you, because you put this team together so quickly. You guys have implemented marketing automation, Marketo. You've only been at it since February, and oh my gosh, look at where you are. Clearly, there was a history of tracking baseline information. Clearly, there was a dedication to analytics and data and ongoing and continuous improvement. And so stepping back and giving our listeners a piece of advice, really two good pieces of advice, and that is start with just 3 to 5 key metrics and just begin tracking that. I call that building a baseline for metrics. You've got to have a baseline, right? You don't know what you can do without that baseline. But I also like your piece of advice on hiring someone with an analytical background. And that's one of the things that you had mentioned, you know, earlier in the interview. It was one of the very first things that you did. So tell me some more about what this person, what their background might look like and how they might be used on a team that's kind of new to marketing automation and to driving these kinds of results.
Sure. So I'll start with your first question, and that's how to start out. And I sincerely believe that the majority of marketers out there already have got their hands around many of the basic metrics, and they're well on their way to advanced metrics and measuring things like conversions and campaign ROIs and detailed trending to understand, you know, kind of funnel leakage, et cetera. But for those who are starting out, perhaps I just really want to say it's really very easy. Just expunge from your memory what you just heard 10 minutes or 5 minutes ago about all these detailed dashboards, or at least kind of put that as a reminder for 12 months down the road in your calendar. Don't worry about that. It's really not that essential. You can start very easily just by opening up an Excel clean spreadsheet, right? Start a new file in Excel, and start filling in the rows in A column, right? Start with site visitors, which you get from Google Analytics. It's very easy. Then in the next few rows, place number of leads in total, number of leads from different categories. So we are a software company, and I'll talk about how we do it, and of course it applies slightly differently to different industries, but everybody will understand what I mean. So you'd show leads, for us you'd show leads from white papers, unique leads from webinars, unique leads from product demos, right? Slightly, you know, I identify a product demo, which is truly about our product, versus a webinar, which is very topical, general industry information to attract people at the top of the funnel. And of course, you can show leads by different product downloads. So if you're a software company like us with several products, you'll show different products that are being downloaded. You can also separate them into free products. We actually have a free product. We call, you know, some call it freemium. And we have trial products. Uh-huh. Right? So those are all different types of downloads, different types of leads. You should also have a line for leads from external sources. So again, if you're going to external vendors, we go, for instance, to vendors like TechTarget or a well-known publication in our industry, Virtualization Review. Everybody in this industry uses these external vendors. That should also be a row in Excel. So far, so good, right? Very simple.
I think that makes I love this 1-2-3 advice, because I do think that's what marketers need. And I also love it's almost like just take a clean, Excel spreadsheet, create your rows, site visitors, number of leads. Then you've got number of leads by category, white paper, webinar, external leads, those kinds of things. Okay, you're right. So far, so good. I'm with you.
So far, so good. So then you just add a few more rows, which are also very simple. New opportunities created and new sales. And you basically have to measure or place the numbers into the cell for each one of these for the past 12 months, let's say, or 6 months, or wherever you want to start. You can start with January of this year. So in the columns at the top, you label them January 2011, February, et cetera, through end of June. And you just get those numbers. Again, at the very top row, so you get that from Google Analytics. And then the other ones you get from Salesforce, right, including opportunities and sales. And then you have several very simple equations, very simple calculations. At a general kind of analytical top level, you can calculate whether there's an increase in your site visitors, an increase in your total leads or specific product leads. That'll give you some trending, and you'll understand whether you're increasing or decreasing. And then you can calculate conversions very easily from opportunities to sales, from old leads to opportunities, or say from trial software to your sales, right? Because you want to measure that trial software is kind of your sales-ready lead. Or if you're advanced and you're a marketer, you can measure it by MQL lead scoring, right? So let's say if you have a lead score over 100, and that is something you all consider in your company as a sales-ready lead, you check how your sales-ready leads are converting into sales. As you can see, all of these equations are really very simple. There's nothing advanced here. It's very, very rudimentary. And
so I like this, again, because you're kind of saying, okay, if you have to walk into the CEO and justify what you're doing, the metrics that matter to the CEO, make sure they're on that spreadsheet. And then there's going to be a few right underneath that are going to be important. But you're right, just build it very basically. Now, a lot of marketers, they may be able to put the columns and the rows in. They may have a hard time actually getting the data to populate it with. And, you know, there's all kinds of issues. I mean, you know, if the salespeople aren't correctly using CRM, if they don't have, marketing automation. And, again, this is the reason why people buy marketing automation, so they can get, you know, this kind of reporting. But it sounds as though you never really had a problem getting data in order for you to do these calculations. So what would you say to people who have problems actually getting the data?
Well, yeah, the 1,000-mile journey starts with the first step, right? So they really just kind of have to start asking questions, right? So every company clearly has somebody on a website team, perhaps, who focuses on Salesforce, who makes sure that the website forms are connected to Salesforce. That person has probably programmed Salesforce and knows how the information gets in there. If you have an analytics person, and by the way, you asked me how to hire one, I'll answer that in a second as well. But if you have an analytics person, it should be their job to spend maybe the first, 30 to 60 days looking at the data in Salesforce and talking to that website person or the CRM specialist who programs Salesforce, and also talking to sales to make sure that they have an understanding and reconcile the numbers, how the opportunities are being tracked, how the leads are being tracked, are they duplicate, are they unique, etc. So it's really starting out with some questioning or meeting with sales and the Salesforce CRM specialist and ask those questions. It'll probably take several weeks of some grunt work, downloading data, looking at it, making sure it makes sense, asking the salespeople if, say, the leads in their territory are correct. So a salesperson can look at it and say, wait, this doesn't make any sense. And then you identify that maybe you didn't capture some other activity in Salesforce because it was probably stored slightly differently. And then you can either ask the CRM specialist to change the way that it gets stored and put different identifiers or create different fields or different reports to run to extract the data differently. Or you can do all kinds of other things to make sure that now that you've identified some of these issues, you collect the data more correctly next time. So it really does begin with wanting to do it and with asking questions.
But, but to your point also, nobody said this was going to be a slam dunk. I mean, moving from traditional marketing over into revenue marketing can be a huge transition for an organization. And along the way, if you have a belief that marketing can connect to revenue, if you believe that marketing can make an impact on revenue, just like it does in your company, then you have to have these changes in place. You have to be able to access data. It has to be correct. And you have to be able to report up to the CEO, for the spend, here's where we are and here's the impact that we made on revenue. So again, I love the outline and I love the approach, but again, I just go back to, when we talk about the revenue marketer, it cannot be a revenue marketer without marketing automation integrated with CRM. Because if you don't have that, you don't have any chance of really getting the data that you need so that you can show that you're making a measurable impact on revenue. So
absolutely.
Give me just a few, let's go back to, the closing question. Well, I actually have two more questions, but if you could just for about a minute, talk to us about, once this person who is doing the analysis has done the grunt work in Salesforce.com, kind of where do they go next and how do they aid a marketing team when they're trying to become more analytical and trying to track the right kind of metrics and report on them?
So, of course, they start with tracking the data in Salesforce. And, of course, once you get a marketing automation system like Marketo, it really simplifies things a lot because Marketo is very good at tracking some of the harder things like the leads to opportunities to sales that you're not able to track very easily just in Salesforce alone, because there are multiple disconnects depending on how your Salesforce is configured. So my marketing analyst or revenue and performance analyst that we have at the company, she's fantastic. She looks at data from Google Analytics to some data in Salesforce to Marketo, combines it all together. Again, nobody really needs to go that deep that fast, right? So the person who's just starting out, if they can just start looking at the most basic things from site visitors to the downloads that are stored in Salesforce to opportunities in sales at a very basic level, they're well on their way to becoming a revenue marketer and making their boss, the CMO and the VP, revenue marketers as well, because with that kind of assistance from an analytical person, everybody learns from each other, right, by osmosis and by looking at this data more frequently and starting to understand all kinds of the issues and the friction in the funnel. So even, you know, I must say that even if somebody doesn't have analytical background, it's not a big deal. If you have an analytical person on your team dedicated to this kind of work, you will quickly get up to speed much faster than you can even think or imagine.
So, Zoran, when I talk to high-level marketing executives like yourself who clearly understand the revenue impact that marketing can and actually is making, because you guys are growing very, very fast, and there's clearly a direct contribution from marketing to the growth of the company. But if you think about CMOs in general, I personally find some CMOs reluctant to enter into this conversation around how marketing is driving revenue. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's very unfortunate. I think that the next generation, the new generation marketing, right, or marketing 2.0 or whatever the latest terminology is, but the new marketing is analytical marketing, right? You can measure everything. You can even measure creative things. So if you have a banner ad that has one design versus another banner ad that has a different design, you can do A-B split tests and see which one converts better. Even if you have physical events, once you get those leads from the event, you bring them back, you upload them into a campaign in Salesforce, and then you can measure campaign ROI and how many of those leads from that physical event ended up being opportunities and ultimately sales deals, right? So it's not just about, you know, being creative about designing an ad or going to an event and having the best booth. You can actually measure the results, not the activity, of each one of those traditional marketing approaches, right? If any CMO is reluctant to discuss analytics, you know, it's unfortunate because that's not very beneficial to their organization. I hate to say it in such a way because I don't want anybody to cringe who's a CMO and is very traditional and doesn't like analytics.
But quite frankly, for a company that either has VC funding or a company that's even publicly traded, for the CMO not to be engaging in this kind of conversation is financially irresponsible, in my opinion. I mean, I think it's just that serious. So we have two minutes, and
yeah.
I really want to hear the answer that you have for this last question, and that is you're so experienced. You guys have moved so incredibly fast. But if you're talking to a brand-new marketer who is just beginning this journey, maybe they've just implemented a marketing automation system, what would be the two or three things that you would share with them that would make that journey easier, faster, better?
A new marketer implementing a marketing automation system, right?
Yep. To me, that's kind of where they begin significantly on that path to revenue marketing. Yep.
Absolutely. Can't do without it. So, you know, first thing I'll say, and this is not kind of flexed promotion for Padowitz Group, but I would say, and I will tell everybody, you did not ask me to say, but I sincerely believe that everybody implementing marketing automation should get a consultant like the Padowitz Group. I mean, it's up to anybody to decide who they want to bring in to consult them, but definitely get a company that can help you integrate the marketing automation system and help you get started. There are a lot of great ideas and best practices that the Padowitz Group has shared with us and helped us really scale and get started quickly in implementing the marketing automation system. It would have taken us a heck of a lot more time to do that. So, Debbie, I know you'd appreciate that, but I sincerely believe this. The second thing is get very serious about analytics and start with Excel, right? And the third thing is keep in mind that there's a lot to do, and it'll take many quarters to get where you probably want to go. There are many different types of drip campaigns to design, many ideas to implement, many things to test. So it's a journey. It's not something you're going to get done in 1 or 2 months. So don't be intimidated by it, and just have that goal in mind in the long term.
I think those are fantastic. And Zoran, you were completely awesome to speak to today. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I hope our
Debbie,
listeners...
You are awesome.
We're going to do a vote, okay? Is he or is he not top three? I took you out of top five. Now you're in top three. So we're going to get into a vote, and I'll let you know how the vote turns out, because you are completely, you are an elite revenue marketer, no question about it. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Now, everyone, thank you so much for having me.
You're so welcome. Our show next week is going to be with Chris Bartik of Conformity. He's going to be talking about using marketing automation to drive freemium conversions. Zorian, this may be a good one for you to listen to as well, because I know you guys have freemiums as well. So thanks, everyone, for listening today. And please remember, you can download these interviews on iTunes. Everyone, have a great week.